Monday through Friday, we pack in the information and the news so we are informed together and we can stay strong together. And that together part is where you come in right now. 877-500-5266. Do join us with your contributions. $10 a month is a great way to jump on in. Become a new member of KBOO this morning. $10 a month is a bite-sized piece of membership. Come on in. The water's fine. 877-500-5266.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. The number to call, 877-500-5266. Call us up because it's only fair, isn't it? You listen to us, you can manage this, and you've got 3 minutes to get on the phone with us. 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO. We would love to offer you a t-shirt as well. Just a few seconds left in this pitch break, so I'll say again the number, 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO. We have more of your favorite programming coming up, and if you can call in the next few seconds, then you can just give a little bit of approval to this program that you just heard. 877-500-5266, KBOO.FM, and click on the donate button. It won't follow you around. It won't pop under. It's easy to do.
Pop under, yeah.
Have you ever got a pop under?
No.
Click on a link and get a pop under. We don't do that.
Okay. And we ask that you do join KBOO right now. KBOO Portland, your community radio station, coming right up between the covers.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partner who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Black Bear Dinner, located at 105 Northeast Burnside Road in Gresham. Open 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. and serving home-style cooking. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now. That's 877-500-5266.
Welcome to Between the Covers. I'm your host, Jake Vermoss, and today we'll be talking with author Renee Macalino Rutledge about her debut novel, The Hour of Daydreams. Born in Manila, the Philippines, and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area from the age of 4, Renee earned degrees in English and creative writing from UC Berkeley and Mills College. A longtime local journalist, her articles and essays have appeared in Color Lines, Filipinas Magazine, Oakland and Alameda Magazine, the San Francisco Bay Guardian, Literary Hub, Mother Magazine, Ford City Anthology, Woman of Color Anthology, and others. Welcome to Between the Covers, Renee.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to start with an excerpt from your novel, The Hour of Daydreams, and if I could ask you to set the stage.
So I'm going to be reading from the beginning of the book, the prologue, and this is in the voice of Malaya, who is the daughter of two of the main characters, Tala and Manolo. And we won't hear the voice of Malaya again until the end of the book in part 3. They whisper that my mother was not one of us, and whatever she was disappeared beneath a pair of wings. At school, talk of my mother floats up from a restless place beneath the ground, surfacing into the soles of their feet and out of their mouths like fog, capable of taking many shapes, spreading in the form of their laughter and murmurs then thinning to nothing, waiting to shake loose from the same furtive earth. They whisper, but never quietly, of how I will sprout wings or horns of my own, how their mothers command them to stay away from the weird Luwalhati girl. But I don't believe what they do. The fog is blinding, but I know too well you can walk right through it. She was a demon evaporates and fades to the mountaintops. She was an angel leaks with a thousand holes. She was a witch echoes once, overshadowed by the sound of my own breathing. She was a saint sinks beneath endless footsteps, walking and forgetting. The most surprising thing is how it goes on after school, how even the wrinkly and gray-haired can act like children and believe in such ridiculous stories. The neighbors and shopkeepers, every boy and girl, aunt and uncle, and their third cousin needs to be home before dark. Stay away from this cursed watering hole or that haunted tree. Avoid stepping on the duendes hiding under their feet. Flee the coming aswang, hungry for the taste of their blood. It's like an infestation of the mind, these fairy tales, the way they've taken root in the bodies of our people. Are our lives so bland that we need this magic, this spice to fill up the holes? Are we ghosts ourselves without them? Or is it the land itself that cannot sleep, packed with lost secrets and layers of bone by the millions, scattered for centuries across 7,000 islands? Theories can't change the way things have been or the way things already are. My mother was just an ordinary woman who could not be strong for us, who left her own daughter motherless. I grew up with a father, two grandparents, and the endless gaping of her absence. I grew up not knowing her. Papa never forced her memory upon me, didn't assume I needed to fill the ripped pages or continue forth a twisted legacy. I could cry with Papa, and he understood it was simply because I fell, not that my every tear was stored up just for her. Instead, I formed a picture of her face with the help of Grandfather Andres, whose slow and raspy words held fragments of a real person, and from these I could imagine the way she might have chewed or laughed or plucked stray petals from my hair. She walked with the eagerness of a child, always quickly, with a longing for her destination imbued in her lean, her far-off gaze. She couldn't cook to save a starving monkey's life. She had long, thin fingers that could sew ordinary cloth into anything and big front teeth that added character to her smile. She enjoyed books, but only Grandfather indulged her with discussions about their complex and elaborate plots. She was an attentive wife and mother who liked to find pretty flowers and place them in my hair. She curled up with me during my naps and responded quickly to my cries, but all along hid a terrible secret. When he talked about my mother with love instead of taunting, inside of me a river began to flow, stirring me from wonder into longing and ultimately bitterness at her absence and the way they all glorified it. That was when the stirring stopped, the river never growing strong enough to trickle out of me in the form of tears. With Grandfather gone and no recollections of her to hold, there is nothing stirring me now, no river inside. I miss even the bitterness, because at least it was the one thing that made her feel real. Without Grandfather Andres here to light a candle in my heart, I gaze at Papa differently, curious about the stories he hides, of the real woman and not the fairy tale, seeking her there in his hidden quiet. Without the stories, I realize there is nothing left. In the summer of my fifth year, I discovered Grandmother Ayalana's special power. She could make the entire barrio sleep in the middle of the day. I could never understand why she forced me to take naps every afternoon without fail, marching me into shadows while the world was bathed in light. It was unjustified punishment, reserved for me alone and for no other reason than to make me suffer. When the unwelcome hour came, I did my best to hide, avoiding the awful feeling of lying still and quiet in Grandmother's bed while my whole body yearned to jump up and down, and I could barely suppress one thought after another from escaping me in the form of a run-on sentence, the flail of an arm, anything to remind myself of the sound of my voice or the sensation of motion. She summoned me with her serious voice, typically reserved for grown-up talk or the inevitable reprimand after I'd done something bad. Hearing that tone and my name called in short, clipped syllables, I knew my hopes of escaping her were lost. Before she could wave her slipper in the air and threaten me with its sting, I resurfaced from behind a long curtain or shaggy hedge, following Grandmother to her bedroom, where the bare white walls closed in dreadfully, and the strangely pleasing smell of Vicks Vapor Rub invigorated the stillness hanging in every molecule of dust. Grandmother positioned herself lengthwise beside me on the bed, stroking my broad forehead, still hot from hours of baking beneath the sun, and sweeping aside the long, fine strands, damp from play, she sang a lullaby. At first I rebelled against this ritual, surely a thing for grandmothers, not to be imposed on children. I squirmed on this mattress and interrupted her song with questions, and if this did not faze her determined melody, kicked her repeatedly in the shins so that Grandmother would stop her song abruptly, retrieve a slipper from the foot of the bed, sting me with two hard slaps on each palm, and return to her singing. Wakefulness never left me as her husky tone and stern expression gradually calmed, followed by the droop of wrinkled lids and the faint odor of stale coffee drifting from her open, lightly snoring mouth. Antokna anak tuloka. She had opened the land of daydreams. Her arm, now doubled in weight, was like a felled log on my chest. Wriggling from beneath it, I tiptoed from her room to find the neighborhood under the spell of her lullaby. Over the fence lines on opposite sides, the hollow shells of hammocks had grown full with a slump of bodies in repose, and out front, rocking chairs and small talk had been abandoned for cool sheets on neatly made beds. Even the neighbor's terrier with its rough, speckled coat had fallen asleep at its post, its whiskers twitching and forepaws pointing at the sky. Only the chickens remained on vigil, craning and releasing their necks like mechanical toys, scraping mindlessly against the gravel. I felt alone just long enough to listen. A million hidden sounds filled the loneliness, insect wings and ripe fruit falling, the ancient creak of trees and cats scratching their own itchy backs. In their stillness, the most ordinary objects shone with dreamlike clarity, a pattern of rust on the wheelbarrow advancing just so, empty plates and half-full saucers from merienda leaving traces of a moment, never to be relived. Silence became noise, then music, and all of it mine. After flipping every brick and stone to see what bugs recoiled underneath, I explored my neighbor's gardens, kicking empty buckets and chasing silly roosters so that their rattles jiggled. Little by little, the faces of other children emerged from behind bushes or the tops of trees. Immune from grandmother's spell, we played hide-and-seek or ran together in twos and threes, wreaking havoc quietly at first so as not to awaken our elders. But the enchantment ran deep, and the sounds of our laughter became part of its rhythm, even for the old men in their hammocks, who must have heard our laughter in their dreams.
That was lovely. Thank you, Renee.
Thank you.
And so I'm holding your book in my hands here, and it's quite the accomplishment. How long was the hour in daydreams in the making?
It took 7 years total. I started it in 2007, the final year of my MFA program at Mills College. The first 50 pages of the book were my thesis project. And then it took me a year to finish the first draft. And in between each draft, I tried to market it to agents. And I didn't realize how much more I had to go after that first draft. It really was not done at all. I ended up writing 3 subsequent drafts following the first.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
If you could describe a little bit of the process.
I wrote this novel primarily at night, and sometimes I was up at 4 a.m. I woke up very early in the morning sometimes on the nights that I didn't stay up till 4 a.m., sometimes at 5 a.m., and just get up and start writing before starting my day.
Yeah, that's quite the discipline.
That's kind of the same reason why I write without music. I need complete silence just to immerse myself in the world that I'm creating.
Oh, that's great. So we were talking earlier off the air about growing up in the Bay Area, just in terms of culture and representation. What was one of the first instances you remember as a kid seeing yourself reflected or centered in stories in the mainstream media?
I don't think I saw myself in books until I became an undergraduate student at UC Berkeley when I took a class in Filipino American literature. And that was the first time I read some of the canonical works like America is in the Heart and Her Wild American Self and Screaming Monkeys and When the Rainbow Goddess Wept. I did have a wonderful moment with my daughter because we have a tradition of every summer continuing to read books aloud to one another, even though she's older. And at the time, I think she was 14 when we read Blackbird Fly aloud to one another. Mm. And I thought to myself, wow, I can see myself in parts of this book. And I think my daughter could too. And how life-changing it would have been to have been able to read a book like this when I was her age. But the good thing is that she has that gift. And it's something that we can continue.
Right. That's kind of heartbreaking and inspiring at the same time, because I had a similar experience growing up, not really seeing myself in any stories.
Yeah.
And Belosa on America's in the Heart made a big impression. If you ever get up to Seattle, he's buried there, and it's a nice sort of pilgrimage.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Okay, so there's a quote from Anais Nin I really liked that I read recently about how we remember things not as they are, but as we are. And this kind of framing device of Malaya remembering the story and telling it to the reader through different perspectives mm-hmm. really kind of had that sense of identity shifting or uncertainty. How would you describe how your narrator looks at truth in this context?
Well, there are multiple narrators in the book, and I think that's one of the ways I tried to reach truth in the book. There is also a way that memory changes in the telling. So with each telling, the story can change. That was something interesting that I wanted to explore definitely in writing the novel. The idea that this folktale could be a product of memory, this very old story is actually a piece of history. And I thought to myself, well, what if it's not just something imagined? What if it's something that is based on true events that happened a long time ago, and the folktale is what we have left? And the novel was my way of reaching back to that time and imagining what those stories might have been and how each retelling kind of changed it along the way.
Right. In your acknowledgments, you mentioned that the book Tales from the 7,000 Islands is one of the influences. And
yeah, I think the folktale was a basis for the book, a source of inspiration. But alone, the folktale itself didn't really come to life for me until I reinterpreted it in a different way.
How would you describe the connection between myth-making and identity? There's a line that I really liked about how grandfather's stories freed me from emptiness without roots.
In the retelling, The Star Maidens, which I read in Tales from the 7,000 Isles, a man spies seven maidens swimming in a river. He steals the wings of one of the maidens, and because he does so, she can't fly away. So he ends up marrying her, and they have a child, and years later, she finds her wings and flies away. So there were so many questions this retelling left me with, and I think that writing the novel was my way of answering those questions. For one, what was she going through all those years? And did she stay with him out of necessity? And when I revisit that scene at the river in my novel, it actually twists the original myth in ways that someone might not expect. It's something that I return to more than once from different perspectives, because I start off the novel from the male point of view. And in setting up that scene, I came to learn what his obsessions were and what was going through his mind at the river. And in returning to that scene later, from her point of view, we see that she had a lot more power than one might imagine. She had a lot more control over the situation. So I think that one of the important reasons why I wanted to retell this myth. I was also very interested in the question of multiple generations. They did have a child together, so I was wondering, motherhood is a very strong bond. What would drive a mother to leave behind a child? What was going on there? So these are some of the questions that I attempted to answer.
Right. I think you do a great job, because for me, presenting that incident at the river from several different perspectives, from Manolo's, from the wife's, from her sister's, and then again from his perspective when he reveals new information near the end, it calls into question kind of our own understanding of events, how we don't always have all the information.
Definitely. And that's something I play with throughout the novel, the idea that when you hear one perspective, you may think of that as truth. You may take it for granted as truth until another perspective comes in and you reevaluate that scene or that moment and say, well, there's another truth that happens simultaneously as that truth. And then you bring another perspective in and you find there's another truth. And what you might learn from that process is that there is no one truth.
Yeah, I liked how you don't ask us, the reader, to choose which one is the true account. It's just kind of an uncomfortable space where we're asked to kind of hold all these things in the same area and just sit with them.
Yeah, it's something that posed a great challenge to me while working on the novel, because you have a couple of different storylines happening simultaneously. And one can't exist while the other one is existing. But at the same time, I have to make them exist. I told myself, how am I going to pull this off? Right. And one of the greatest pieces of advice I got was actually from my thesis advisor at the time at Mills College, Yun Lee. And she told me, which is the story that you believe? And she's like, I think you have to know that before you go forward. And I thought to myself, which is the story that I believe? And from then on, I followed that. And it changed the whole process.
For younger kids like your daughters or your younger self, what does it mean to have a story like this that they can relate to?
Well, my daughter, my six-year-old, recently she started calling me Book Girl. And it's kind of funny because if you think about Book Girl, it almost sounds like a superhero in a way. Like Supergirl, Book Girl, at least that's how I like to look at it. But like on the day of my reading here at Powell's, she said to me, hey there, Book Girl. And on the way up here, we traveled to Klamath Falls as a stopover on the way to Portland. And I had my niece with me, which they later had to turn back due to car problems. But my niece told me, Auntie, you're writing a book? Oh, you wrote a book? I'm writing a book too. And she's 8 years old and she's writing a novel now. And every time I see her, we talk about process. Another great thing that happened to me at my Alameda launch was one of my friends came up to the podium when I was signing and she had her 12-year-old daughter with her. And she said, I thought it was really important to bring her today so that she could see that this is possible. So it feels very empowering and to know like that our stories are out there and that we are, and they can be the agents of their own narratives.
Yeah, I love that story, Book Girl. And yeah, if I had access to my nieces, I would have totally brought them to your reading at Powell's.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been surprising to me that the book is actually interpreted sometimes as a YA novel. Mm. And I think part of that is because it's framed in Malaya's perspective.
I think some of those definitions are a little bit unfairly reductive, though.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why it's been encouraging to see that the book hasn't been strictly placed on one category and that people from so many different genres or that enjoy different genres seem to connect with the book.
Did you want to share a little bit of any other projects, writing projects you might be working on now that this is done, or are you kind of not focusing on that yet?
I'm not doing as much writing as I want to be doing right now, but I am working on a collection of short stories, and the first in that collection is going to be published this month in the Tishman Review. It's called The Cigarette Thieves. I'm working on a novel, but I have a lot of research to do for this next one, because it's going to be taking place in a certain time period and place that I need to learn a lot more about. And I'm also, because I've been writing a lot of essays to promote the novel, it's kind of opened up a new thing for me, writing memoir pieces, which I have no aim of publishing, but just it's calling to me to write.
So before we close out, is there any other authors you've been reading that you want to recommend, or anything that's in your head lately?
I have a lot of books actually at my bedside table right now. One of them is 25 Chickens and a Pig for a Bride, One Tribe by Evelina Galang. I have Barbara Jane Reyes's Poeta in San Francisco on my bedside table. I'm also part of a great group called 17 Scribes, so I have advanced reader copies of some of those books, and one of them that I'm reading right now is called Bleed Through by Adriana Arrington. I just bought a copy of The Sympathizer, and I really want to read that book. My reading list is very long.
The Hour of Daydreams is available from Forest Avenue Press at Powell's and other booksellers. This is Between the Covers, and you're hearing, I'm your host, Jake Vermoss, with Renee Macalino Rutledge, also known as Book Girl.
Thank you for having me, Jake.
And you are listening to KBOO Community Radio. Please do join your friends, join your family, join your neighbors, join your community, and become a member of this amazing community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Teresa.
And we are asking you to support our spring membership drive right now. That was a fabulous interview with Renee Macalino-Rutledge, and you have been listening to that interview. The interview is by Jake Vermas, who is one of our new KBOO volunteers. And you can be one of the people that supports this effort that gets these fantastic voices of authors reading their own works, the insightful interviews from community members, writers themselves, coming together to share the love of literary arts and culture here through the auspices of KBOO's broadcast, KBOO's live streaming. KBOO. It is the community medium that right now we are asking you to support with, you know, how about $10 a month? What about it? $10 a month. It's a great way to join KBOO. You can do it right now by calling 877-500-5266. You can get a copy of the book, The Hour of Daydreams, and a CD of the full 30-minute interview with Jake Vermas by calling 877-500-5266. And with your minimum contribution of $75, you can take that as your thank you gift. You can also give more than that. That's a wonderful thing. Please do right now. Take the action to support your community radio station that supports literary arts, performing arts, radio theater and poetry, as well as news and information of hard-hitting political analysis. We bring it all to you. It's a labor of love. It's brought to you by just a ton of volunteers. About 500 volunteers actually make this place go. And of course, your support, our members' support, keeps the lights on, keeps the bills paid, and keeps us all together. 877-500-5266.
KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell. And a $75 pledge, that's $6.25 a month, if I remember correctly, gets you the book and the copy of the full 30-minute episode of Between the Covers. We've been talking about Renee Macalino-Rutledge's The Hour of Daydreams. I think I'll just try that again. Renee Macalino-Rutledge's The Hour of Daydreams is a stirring and haunting exploration of marriage, culture, and gender roles. You'll find yourself cheering for Tala and Manolo as they stumble through fears and desires, and you'll celebrate the choral narration with its multiple perspectives on love and community. This debut novel is a delicate weaving of mythology and everyday lives, and it is a necessary addition to the literature of the Filipina diaspora. That's a quote from Daisy Hernandez, who wrote A Cup of Water Under My Bed. It's the sort of humanities that you can get on KBOO Portland, and we're very proud to present it. For those of you who listen to this on a regular basis, I would like to suggest that you just take the time, take about 3 minutes, call us at 877-500-5266, 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266. And if you'll do that right now and spend a couple minutes on the phone, you can get your copy of The Hour of Daydreams by Renee Macalino-Rutledge.
Absolutely true. Or you can join us online at kboo.fm, just like Priscilla did from Northeast Portland and Tom from North Portland. We also want to thank Rich from Corvallis, Wendy from Southwest Portland, who called especially because she loves Joanne Hardesty's show, Voices from the Edge, and she listens every Thursday morning. We also heard from Terry from Northeast Portland, who is already a monthly subscriber, but decided to go ahead and give an extra gift in support of KBOO volunteers, and she noted that Portland is a better place because of KBOO. And we would like to think the whole world is a better place because of KBOO, right? Because of that ripple effect. As we create social change together, as we reinforce each other's efforts, it is time for you to join in this effort that does so much, that gives so much back to the community. It is a wonderfully reciprocitous, relationship
I love that one.
That you are involved with when you pick up the phone and call 877 877-500-5266 to avail yourself of a copy of this book, The Hour of Daydreams, that will also come with a CD of the full 30-minute interview with Renee Macalino-Rutledge and Jake Vermas. Please, you can avail yourself of that for $6.25 a month. As Teresa was saying, that's a minimum contribution of $75. Jump on in and support KBOO, your independent community resource, right now. 877-500-5266. Between the Covers has been on the air for more than 30 years, bringing you amazing authors, cutting edge literary arts, and really in-depth interviews with so many people. You get to hear their thoughts, their writing process, and we bring it all to you, our listeners, because we know you want this, we know you deserve this, and right now we deserve a little support from your financial means. Please call and join KBOO today, 877-500-5266. And now we're getting ready for Words and Pictures.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partner who donated food for our volunteers today. Lunch was provided by Black Bear Dinner, located at 105 Northeast Burnside Road in Gresham. Open 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. and serving home-style cooking. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now. That's 877-500-5266.
Hello and welcome to a special membership drive edition of Words and Pictures, the show all about the narrative arts scene. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. We are talking with a true behind-the-scenes filmmaker today. You wouldn't recognize him if you saw him on the streets, but you'd sure know the characters that he's helped to bring to life, from the